Jonathan Howcroft, Halftime's Dual International. For the new Mexican chicken sub from Subway.
Little technical issue there that's been quickly fixed during the break. Jonathan Howcroft, how are you?
I'm good. I'm wrecking the place.
That's
good,
all right.
Good that there are good people around to fix my mistakes. Thanks, Shebex.
How are you, buddy? You busy?
I am good. It's different being on a Wednesday. I'm still readjusting to being the hump day rather than Tuesday, where you're still looking back to the weekend. That's just been.
Now you're not looking back or forward. You're just sort of stuck in the middle.
I think by this time, 3 o'clock on a Wednesday, you're looking forward, aren't you? You're looking forward to the weekend. Everyone's talked about Jordan Spieth and the.
What a great win. You know what I liked about the win? You know what I liked about Jordan Spieth? His old maths teacher was his caddy.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Everything about Jordan, the Jordan Spieth experience was terrific. I've got one reservation.
Mm-hmm.
His lack of emotion really perturbs me. It kind of reminds me of some of those TV series psychopaths that you see that have such a narrow range of human emotion that you wonder whether they're feeling anything at all. Now, clearly in his instance, it's part of his training. It's part of what makes
he's
him
he's very
such
confident
a good player.
In himself.
Absolutely.
He was asked the question, and I think I might have relayed this yesterday by one of the commentators, are you enjoying this run of luck? Of informed that you this run of luck that you're having over the last couple of months, and he really took offence to it, and he said it's not luck. He said this is what I expect from myself every time I step out on the golf course. If I don't get it, then I'm really annoyed with myself. But this is it. This is what I want.
And that focus and determination
and
what have you at that age is extraordinary. I mean, part of why an aspect of why we all engaged with Tiger so much when he was so young is because there was so much visible emotion going on. The way he hit such attacking shots, his recoveries were attacking, his fist pumps and relationship with Steve Williams, and there were so many reasons to kind of engage with him. Whereas Jordan Spieth, it was surgical, wasn't it?
More worried about his hair than anything else.
Yeah, and I deservedly so. I think it must be tough being.
We spoke about it yesterday.
21 and receding like that. I think you've just got to bite the bullet, haven't you?
Well, just wear your hat.
But have you seen so many tour players now? They have a kind of a weird 6 inches or so of
visor.
Well, no. Their faces are tanned and their necks and shoulders are tanned. But their faces, because they've been covered by the cap, their foreheads are really pale.
That is weird.
Kind of looks odd, and especially when you're receding a bit like he is.
But great win. How many more has he got in him? That's the thing.
Well, the big question is the competition, isn't it? Part of I remember doing some research a while ago, trying to compare Tiger to Jack Nicklaus in the legend stakes. And part of where Tiger excelled was that there was a much broader range of competition, but less outstanding competition, if that makes sense, in terms of multiple major winners, Ernie Els, Phil Mickelson were the natural rivals, but not like Tom Watson, Lee Trevino in the Nicklaus era. The big question is, will McIlroy, how presumably McIlroy's got a decade of elite golf. You've got Spieth. You've still got Bubba Watson, Phil Mickelson, and there's a lot going around. And then you've got to wonder what happens in his life. I mean, McIlroy lost a year effectively changing his clubs. He's had his issues with his management companies. He's had family issues. So McIlroy could, arguably have had even more majors than he's got already if everything else was going his way. And clearly we know what's happened to Tiger Woods, don't we? I mean,
well publicised.
He should have an unbeatable record by now. So you don't know what will happen in his private life, but just from what we've seen in his short professional career so far, he's clearly got everything. And, like I said off the top, he's just so emotionally neutral that it's hard to see him going completely one way or the other.
I'm being told off the SMS by Simon in Ascot Vale. Thank you, Simon, and I trust you're correct. Jordan has a sister with special needs, and that's where he invests his emotions.
Yeah, that was talked a lot during the coverage, and a lot of the features that you read about him are so warm. They're so, the way he talks about his sister and relates to his sister, and his brother's an elite college athlete, I think, as well, if that's right. He's a basketballer. So, you know, there are other things going on in his life other than golf that he grounds himself in.
Interesting SMS also, just on that before we move on. Probably didn't show the emotion because he's still so young, hasn't really experienced the years of expectations and torment that others have. I would have thought that'd be the other way around, though. I would have thought the young show their exuberance more, and as you get older, you learn how to contain it.
Yeah, I would be on your side of that argument, Shebex, definitely. But it's to his great credit. I know I kind of made it sound a bit of a criticism, and I think, you know, if you go through a 20-year career without showing any emotion,
it's not a criticism, it's just a damning observation.
But, you know, I mean, when I play golf, I clearly nowhere near to that standard. It's so difficult dealing with the bad shots and putting it out of your mind when you address, you know, the recovery, and that was what he did so well. But then he wasn't, you know, it wasn't as if he was going overboard celebrating the consequences of the good shots as well. But, you know, he's walking away with a green jacket.
Won a lot of fans over here at the Australian Masters.
Yeah, I mean, he clearly conducts himself extremely well, doesn't he? There's nothing in his behaviour to dislike about him. I can, you know, you can see why people might dislike Bubba Watson, for example.
No, I can't.
Really? Not one in five tour professionals.
I know, we spoke about this last week. Having caught up with Bubba before at a press conference and say, he just seems like a lovely guy.
Yeah.
Bit over the top.
Yeah, I mean, a brilliant personality and an engaging personality, and someone who clearly speaks honestly, or, you know, maybe sometimes a little bit too much. But yeah, I can see why.
So it's more an Aussie than he does a Yank.
He could rub people up the wrong way. Yeah, maybe so.
Maybe that's why we relate to him, and the tour professionals don't.
Well, I mean, Robert Allenby was fourth on that list, wasn't he? So maybe it is an Australian or an Australian-ness thing.
Maybe it is. 9429 1116. If you want to have a chat to us about anything in the world of sport, A-League salary caps on our list to talk about. We might do that after the next break.
Sure.
We might just take a bit of time talking about West Indies and England first up, because obviously this hold some importance, I suppose, for Australia, to the extent that we're heading off to the West Indies shortly. As soon as England leave, we'll probably land there and play our couple of tests before heading over to England for the Ashes. Is England going along nicely? Just getting a little bit of form up, aren't they?
I wouldn't know about that. The thing about England, and we'll work to
our list. Were they 3 for 15 or something?
They were 3 for not very much, recovered, and then lost a bundle at the end. The thing about England is this was their opportunity to make seismic changes, to say, look, the team that we had up to a certain point ran its course, and now we're going to rebuild and look to the future. They haven't really done that. They've backed in Ben Stokes again, which is pleasing to see. Moeen Ali's still yet to come back. He'll probably play the second test, which will be good. But otherwise, they've gone back to Jonathan Trott at the top of the order. So the 1-2-3 is Cook, Trott, balance. If you're Mitchell Johnson...
Ducky 11-4, I think, between the three of them.
If you're Mitchell Johnson, Ryan Harris, Mitchell Stark, Josh Hazlewood, you know, that's three walking wickets.
You would think the only thing that restricts Australia from getting matches done in 3 days, 3.5 days, is the pitches themselves.
Absolutely.
Are they going to be able to extract every ounce of demon from that pitch that they need to?
Well, I mean, the two ways to go with that. In the West Indies, they're going to be dead. You know that they're going to be dead pitches. So from a West Indies tour perspective, they need to pick an 11 each game that's prepared to do some grunt work. And the added element of that is the West Indies have got Shivnaran Chandrapal. And he's, let me just look at the scorecard, he's 29 off 98 deliveries. And that's just his career in an innings. So there's going to be a role for somebody like Peter Siddle to bowl those dry overs where it's just slog to get through a session. And I can see two spinners.
That makes a lot of sense.
I can see both Nathan Lyon and Fawad Ahmed in the same team. And I can see this being a really good opportunity to audition Fawad for the Ashes tour. And maybe that puts extra responsibility on somebody like Mitchell Marsh to be a genuine all-rounder who has to bat at six and bowl as a second or third seamer. I mean, it might not be the most exciting-looking 11 that you're ever going to see from Australia, but there is going to be some hard work, and they're not going to want to flog Mitchell Starc or Mitchell Johnson on a tour like this. But then from a from an England bowling perspective, it's the same old dull dross. Anderson and Broad, who are a yard down on the pace of their of their peak careers, they're not swinging it at all. Chris Jordan, for me, isn't an international bowler just yet. And James Treadwell, who's the spinner for this match, while Moeen Ali isn't available, couldn't even get in Kent's team in the county championship last year. So it just makes you scratch your head that they've got a kid on tour called Adil Rashid. They've got four Yorkshiremen that they're not playing, that they brought on tour. Yorkshire won the county championship last year. And all of the borderline decisions, they kind of played safe. So they picked Jonathan Trott to open ahead of Adam Lythe. They picked James Treadwell ahead of Adil Rashid. And you just kind of think, this is an opportunity to do something different.
Yeah.
Show Australia that there might be a joker.
You're not playing the world champions in the West Indies.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, you're spot on. James Anderson, 100 tests, will shortly become England's all-time leading test wicket taker as well. We spoke about this with Hoggy the other day. It's an amazing achievement.
It is an amazing achievement, but I wonder what his reputation is in Australia, what people think of him. Because to me, when I think of James Anderson, I think of this. Really, he's got a beautiful action. He pitches it just on a full length and swings it away. And then with the older ball, he nips it. He can nip it back with a reverse swing.
I don't see him as one of the great bowlers.
No, I don't either.
He's a good, solid performer.
And his performances in World Cups have been poor. And his overseas, so his average overseas is 36. Mm. And to me, that's not an elite performer. So he's in his 100th test. He's going to pass Ian Botham as England's all-time leading test wicket taker. But I just wonder whether he has that status that kind of performance would suggest. And the kind of a counterpoint to that would be Crickinfo has done some stats analysis of his performance. And if you actually go through the plays that he's played against in his career, and he's decade or so, has come at a time when batsmen have been scoring runs for fun and some of the best batsmen in history have been playing. Only Graham Smith and Ricky Ponting average over 40 against him. So Michael Clark, Sachin Tendulkar, Kumar Sangakkara, Jack Callis, some very, very good players haven't been able to get on top of him. So against the best, he has proven himself, and he's got series wins under his belt where he's been the leading wicket taker. So he deserves his place. I just, for me, there's just something just stopping him being short of where we, where is an England supporter you might hope he'd rest. And be interested to know if Australian fans think the same.
9-4-2, 9-11-16, your thoughts on the English team heading into the Ashes. We know about the Aussie team. Your thoughts on James Anderson as a bowler. What did you think? Was he one of the greats, just a plotter, or just a really, really solid performer for England?
And what should Australia do going into the West Indies tour? How would you approach it? Should you just pick your best 11, all guns blazing and wipe the floor with them, or be a bit more conservative and use it as a stepping stone to the Ashes?
Before we go to the break, let's go to Ty out at Springvale. Just wants to have a quick talk about Jordan Spieth. G'day, Ty.
Yes, g'day, guys. Jordan Spieth, I read an article the other day that apparently he had rented two houses while he was at Augusta, while he was staying there. One of the houses was for all his family and all his friends that could come over, and no golf was allowed to be spoken. There was no golf allowed on TV. It was purely a getaway for him. And the other house that he rented was the house that he went on his own and got the time on his own to sort of think about it. And, and he sort of went to and from both houses. And it sort of made me think, he must be a well-grounded young man with really good people around him giving him good advice to do something like that.
It's so important nowadays, isn't it? To have good advice if you're young and good at something at sport.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've got daily examples almost in football codes, haven't we, about what happens when that goes either way. But yeah, good call, Ty. It is refreshing to hear somebody be so methodical and well thought out and well planned and pull it off at the end of it all.
Got a $50 drinks and dining voucher for you, Ty. At the Savoy Tavern, 677 Bourke Street, Melbourne. If you're heading out for a game at Etihad, then the Savoy Tavern is the place to meet before the footy at the Had. So $50 drinks and dining voucher for you, mate. Thanks for your call. Really do appreciate it. We're going to take a break. Back with more of JP Howcroft in just a tick. We're talking cricket. England West Indies coming up to the Ashes in the next couple of months. It is only really a couple of months away. It's not too far at all.
Yeah, it's not. It's not. I mean, the domestic first class season has started in England.
Yep. IPL season started.
It has, yeah. And, Aaron Finch gone down with a hamstring injury.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ooh.
It doesn't sound like a good one either. So hopefully he recovers pretty quick.
Did you see Davey Warner's catch the other day?
Good catch. Captain.
Yeah.
Captain David Warner.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that?
No. Not 2 years ago, I couldn't have.
not 12 months ago.
If there has been a man, has there ever been a bigger transformation of a sports person in a 12-month period than Dave Warner?
Blimey.
12 months might be short, maybe 18 months.
That's a good one to throw out and have a think about. The thing I like about the David Warner story is it's just human maturity, isn't it?
Well, it's meeting a woman and settling down and just getting on with life.
Absolutely right.
Realising that you don't have to be a dick every day of your life.
Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. And, you know, the conversation about changing the draft age in footy, it just seems to stand to reason that you give people more opportunity to mature at different rates, and you see different sides of people. There was a story in the paper today, I think it was in Fairfax, about there are some top level midfielders weren't picked in the top three in the national draft. I think it was Fife, Bontempelli, Pendlebury, and they're just case studies in different.
Yeah, Jack Nowell wrote it. Yeah. Five young guns may change clubs' thinking at the draft.
Exactly. So if you push the draft age a bit further and you allow blokes to mature, that you can't pick blokes in Premier League football, for example. You're picking blokes at 15, 16, 17. It's too young to expect them to be the finished product at that time. And we saw with David Warner, who might be on a slightly later timetable than we'd have hoped.
Yeah.
To see him now is just a different bloke, isn't he?
Getting some great nominations coming through in the SMS for blokes that have transformed their life in a 12-month period or thereabouts.
Tex Walker's a perfect one, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, yeah.
Absolutely perfect.
Had the mullet, just was a lout.
Well, he was drinking in the stands with his mate.
That's right, he was too. That's right.
Wasn't he when he was
And now he's captain.
And was it Phil Walsh when he was talking about how he was selecting the captaincy? He was saying that when people came into his office when he was interviewing them, everybody except Tex Walker, the question was, what's in it for me? And Tex Walker was the only one who was, this is what I can do for the club and this is why I can make Adelaide a better proposition. So, yeah, good nomination.
Good one, Tex Walker. Ricky Ponting from Bourbon and Beefsteak to Australian captain.
Yeah, I mean, that was a bit longer, wasn't it?
That was a four or five year period.
Yeah, that wasn't just a 12-month
Michael thing, Clark was probably a 2 year period.
Yeah, good. Both good examples. Definitely. And again, not wholly focused on their relation, their private lives, but such a
and even Mitch Johnson.
Yeah, well, I mean,
he had that fallout with his mum, didn't he, a couple of years ago?
That was, I mean, they're just things that you have to deal with. I think they're just unfortunate things that would be better to avoid, particularly when you're not in a good run of form yourself.
Eric Cantona, someone says.
Ah, well, he wrong person to pick for me. He's an all-round legend. Oh yeah, absolutely.
Oh yeah,
in my top three breathing people probably.
So you've gone from Kung Fu fighter to
yeah. Well, I mean, in that classic way that you're prepared to ignore defects in people that you idolise. I wouldn't. There's no way that I would ever try and defend what he did, but. It adds to his character.
Lawsy says Warner's still the most disliked cricketer in the world outside of Australia. So he's the Bubba Watson.
Yeah, maybe so. But you think about where he was 12, 24 months ago, arguing with journalists online and punching Joe Root in a bar. You can still be an obnoxious figure on the field and have the rest of your life in order and that be a conscious decision to be an aggressive personality.
Steve Johnson from the Cats turned his life around, won the North Smith Medal in 2007. David Beckham.
Yeah, I mean, Steve Johnson's a good example of a club harnessing that potential, isn't it? You, using David Beckham as an example, Alex Ferguson at Manchester United, one of the things that he would do with young players would be to encourage them to get married and have kids as young as possible because of, you know, what we're talking about with David Warner and so on. It grounded them, it gave them it meant that he wasn't having to chase them around Manchester and looking for them in nightclubs at 2 a.m. or what have you. And, you know, David Beckham is an example of that.
Someone says a great book on development and opportunity on this sort of thing called Outliners or Outliers.
Yeah.
So, good look at that.
Yeah, well, it's Malcolm Gladwell, the idea of the 10,000 hours of practice and development.
We're talking about that the other day. I went to a coaching coordinator's course on Monday, and they were talking about the 10,000 hours over 10 years, I think.
Yeah.
So, 1,000, if you practice 1,000 hours a year, you will become the best. The thought is you'll become the best at your sport.
Yeah, I mean, you'll put yourself in that elite conversation.
Yeah. That's a lot of work.
It is.
Work it out, though. 1,000 hours a year, that's nearly 3 hours, two and a half hours a day, day.
There's somebody...
From the age of 10.
There's somebody on one of the minor golf tours, I think, who's doing it as a case study. I think as an adult, he's attempted to follow that platform.
That's got to be a flawed study. If you know you're doing it.
Good question. It just depends whether he's covered in his methodology, I guess, doesn't it? But I think his idea being that, you know, if I do spend 10,000 hours doing a single subject, a single event, how far can I actually get? And I think he's on the minor tours somewhere.
Okay.
In the US.
Interesting study. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have a chat about the A-League.
Yes.
And Perth Glory and their salary cap. We had a chat about this with Carlos before, and we got some really interesting thoughts from our listeners. We might get some more, I reckon, Excellent. After this, though. JP Howcroft in the studio as well at 22 minutes to 4, just before we get onto the salary cap. Agreements with you on the SMS. Cantonard transformed Man United and English football. Made overseas players popular and acceptable to the English public and league.
Yeah, he was in a wave of players that helped do that. He wasn't alone. Gianfranco Zola, Dennis Bergkamp were important in that as well. But yeah, I mean, what he brought to Manchester United was hugely significant, and not just on field. The way he brought a group of young players through who just idolised him.
Being from a country that doesn't have a salary cap in the football competition,
good segue.
Does it surprise you that we do?
No, it doesn't. I mean, it's the economies of scale in Australia are such that it's inevitable that you need some kind of check and balance in the system. And I wouldn't advocate for removing the salary cap. That's, you know, put that front and centre. What I would advocate is greater flexibility, a softening of the cap. It isn't a hard cap to begin with because of the payments to marquee players that are outside the cap.
Correct.
I would soften the cap further to allow teams that have the capacity to spend more sustainably to do so. So at the moment, we're in a situation where we're trying to create such an even competition that the poorest team can compete with the richest team. And I understand why, and I accept that argument. However, I would argue now that with the potential, for example, of the City Group, the Bakery Group, Tony Sage in Perth, as we've seen, you know, just the scale of Melbourne Victory without somebody bankrolling them, that we could be more creative and improve the overall product, and not just the A-League itself, but the game in general. And I'll give you my example. Take Andy Keogh. For me, Andy Keogh has improved the competition this year. He's in the competition by the looks of things, by the available evidence, under false pretenses. He's a significant portion of his salary is outside the cap. What I would suggest is if Perth Glory have the money to enable Andy Keogh to play in the competition, then we all benefit. The game benefits, Perth benefit. Or what I would then argue that we need to do is counterbalance that to find an opportunity to grow the game in other areas that don't just benefit Perth Glory.
But then wouldn't the league come back at that and say, well, that's why we've got the marquee spot?
They would, and you know, that's a perfectly fair, you know, fair stalling point and say, look, that's as soft as the cap needs to be. But take something like a luxury tax, which they've got in
NBA.
In the NBA. The idea where if you spend over the cap, you then put that same, you know, dollar for dollar into a different pot that then benefits the rest of the competition. If, for example, you created a development fund, which then went into paying junior registration fees or a Socceroo development academy, there would be an incentive. You'd almost incentivize teams to improve their team, improve the A-League, and also, as a consequence, improve the development of young footballers as well. It feels like there's a win-win opportunity. And what I guess the question that I would ask is, are we rejecting opportunities to make the competition better, have better players in it, because we're looking to work towards a mean position, which is under par, rather than saying, okay, let's keep a level of fairness, a level of equality, but allow clubs that have the potential to do more to do more, and as a consequence, benefit everybody in the process.
Every club has the potential to do more, surely.
Oh, well, within the marquee, you know, within the marquee position. But if it's...
So would you, what would you add, a second marquee player?
I would look to introduce something like a luxury tax.
Okay.
So that the cap was softened to such an extent that clubs weren't really paying, you know, clubs that didn't have to pay close attention to where they were in the cap, didn't worry about it, so that they could go about their business, build a squad as they chose, and then effectively were taxed for it.
Okay, so for example, and for those that don't understand the luxury tax, if your salary cap was $8 million and you spent $8,545,000,
yes,
you would then have to put another $545,000 into a kitty.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. So the playing field was still within a global football perspective level, but there was the opportunity for clubs still to push themselves and push the boundaries further. Crucial to that is sustainability. So the part of the purpose of the salary cap is to prevent teams from overstretching and going bankrupt. If you're the City Group, for example, that are owning Melbourne City, it seems to me to stand to reason to encourage them to spend as much as humanly possible in Melbourne, in Australia, in Australian football, while they're interested in the game.
Rather than restricting them, you're right.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I'm not saying that the luxury tax is the solution, but as a conversation starter, as a means to try and frame the conversation, clearly Perth Glory need punishing if they're proven guilty of what they're suspected of doing.
Because they are the current rules.
Absolutely. And there's malice aforethought, it appears, in the evidence that's presented to us at the moment. So it appears that they've deliberately tried to circumnavigate the rules. However, what they've done, for mine, is improve the competition by having Andy Keogh in it. Can we be creative and find solutions where they're able to get Andy Keogh in the competition that benefits everybody?
Interesting point in case is, Carlos brought it up earlier on, Ben Kelfler for the Melbourne Victory. Now, the Melbourne Victory had the foresight and the guts to bring this guy over and play football over here. He's turned out to be an absolute star.
Yeah.
His payments from next year and beyond far outweigh what he's currently being paid.
Yeah.
Melbourne Victory may not be able to keep him.
Great example. And my perspective, you know, approaching this would be, how do we find a solution that works for Melbourne Victory in this situation, rather than saying, here's the pot of cash that you've got available. If supply and demand means that he can earn more somewhere else, then he goes somewhere else. That just doesn't feel right to me. Ironically, they've benefited this season because Besat Berisha was in the same situation with Brisbane Roar, where they had to choose between him or Thomas Broch.
Yep. It's actually quite funny because, and Greg brings it up, and it's a very, very valid point. Why don't we rate players, we just direct players where to play, and limit the revenue you can generate as members you can have? It's a communist system when every sporting club is a capitalist system. And that's right. Sport is all about the best going to the top and winning. And if you're not good enough, then you don't win.
Well, if we keep...
But what we keep trying to do here in Australia, and we're doing in the AFL, we're doing it in the A-League, and they do it in the NRL to an extent, not as big though, is we try to get equalisation.
Yeah, I mean, and it's understandable from an economies of scale perspective that it's the A-League...
Well, then cut down the number of teams.
Well, they're already down to 10 which
in the A-League.
Yeah, I mean, the challenge would be to double or triple the number of professional teams and create promotion and relegation, ultimately. But yeah, keeping it on a political analogy, what I'd be advocating is social democracy, not socialism. So you would create enough flexibility
semantics
to help people help themselves.
Yeah, I'll think about that one during the break. Back with more on the team. Welcome back. It is 4:08 here on 11:16 SEM. We've just had a look at a pretty nice goal that was scored by a young lad from Heidelberg United. John's on the road. I think, John, you might have even filmed the goal.
Well, it wasn't me filming, guys. It was actually me commentating on it. But Mark Campbell is a cameraman for HUFC TV, and we film our games each week. And I reckon that's about as world-class a goal as you'll see, yeah.
It's a fair whack. If anybody hasn't seen it, it's on the homepage of SBS The World Game. Definitely worth checking out. How's the NPL going this year?
Well, it's pretty exciting. Our own club, Heidelberg United's recruited well. And Andreas, who scored the goal, is one of the big recruits we picked up.
8-2 win over Green Gully, wasn't it?
Yeah, biggest win there for many a year. And South Melbourne, of course, are up there, who won the championship last year. And Bentley Greens, who had the big run in the FFA Cup, are also doing well, and as are the Melbourne Knights. So it's going to be a pretty tight comp, and I think a lot of the clubs have recruited with the FFA Cup in mind, you know, giving them a lot of exposure and helping them, you know, boost their big crowds at their own home ground. So, you know, it looks to be a good competition this year, yeah.
Should also mention, too, in the Doherty Cup, the FFA Cup, played last night, Knights Stadium, Melbourne Knights 3, Sunbury United 0. So a lot of other games around too. Thanks for that, John. Thanks for bringing the goal to our attention. As we said, have a look at it on SBS, the Wall Game homepage, and you get to check it out. Not a bad strike. Just, what, halfway between the centre line and...
Yeah, about 25, 30 metres out. Gives it a fair wallop. It kind of almost takes the goalkeeper into the net.
Yeah.
It's that powerful from that distance. Good strike.
Very, very good strike. What do you think of the World Cup qualifying?
I think it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. There's something...
That we actually learned about two countries that we never
exactly,
knew existed.
Exactly. And this is what's so great about football. I'm not it the kind not. Of person that tub-thumps about the world game, you know, as a community builder like this. But when you're in the Asian Confederation, this is what you've got to expect and look forward to. You know, we can barely even pronounce Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan or have any idea where they are. In a year's time, we'll know stacks about them.
Yeah.
There'll be people, you know, there'll be Australian football fans visiting there. There'll be players talking about the cultural exchange that goes on, and hopefully they take this opportunity to explore these places while they're there, not just go from air-conditioned hotel to stadia back to their hotels and actually, you know, find out about these places and come back and tell us about them and, you know, maybe spark a tourist industry or a greater interest in these parts of the world that we would otherwise not really have paid any attention to.
Did you watch Foreign Correspondent last night?
I didn't.
And the story about Palestine? Their soccer team? Once again, I employ you, get on to the ABC online and have a look at it. It was just a great story about what Palestine had to go through to get here to Australia, what the players had to endure in regards to leaving their families behind in...
Yeah.
Buildings that had been blown up and all this sort of stuff was just amazing
stuff.
Well,
I mean, Palestine as an example is a good one because it's a registered member of FIFA, but it isn't a recognised state in the UN.
Exactly. So. But and having said that, it's quite funny, isn't it? Because obviously Israel and Palestine are next door to each other, but Palestine's part of the AFC, but Israel isn't recognised by the AFC and they've had to go play in Europe.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the politics of football are obviously very... contentious at the best of times, but the idea that you can have a game that's so global, so universal, that it enables us to learn about these places and put it in a context. So, you know, when you're talking about Tajikistan, you have a conceptual idea of, okay, this is where it is, this is what they do. I remember this guy scoring a goal. This was his family's story. This was, do you know what I mean? It's just, and you know, the Asian Cup was such a good shop window for that to see how, you know, how big the game can be in this country.
Well, that's up to us. We need to do that as a media. We need to start working on educating people on what they can expect when we take those countries.
I think we have, yeah. I mean, it's our responsibility to expose people to them. I think we have to be careful about barracking for the game or barracking for a level of development that might not be organic. But just simply being at Amy Park when there's 10,000 Iranian fans, for example, is sufficient enough just to be given that opportunity. That, you know, that then sells itself after that.
Time for me to say goodbye to you.
Sad day.
You've been good. Thank you. It is sad. Daniel Harford will be back with you next week.